Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. You're listening to Through the Eyes of Women here on KHSU. I'm Danielle Orr here with Brenda Perez. She is a researcher and PhD candidate from the National University of Mexico. When we last left off, you were talking about the cannabis industry and being on a farm. So the police came, and this, of course, is all because you're studying the criminality of drugs, both in Mexico and the United States. So let's continue that story.
Yes, that was a first call of attention. As I said, there is no way a plant could be, a plant like the marijuana, as powerful as it is in this context, Mexico and the United States, could be grown in a safety way without the observation of the government, the federal government in this case. I realized how, regardless the efforts of the state for legalized, there is still this power superior running around about saying what is criminal and what is not.
Do you see this because of the big financial gain that the industry brings in? Is it, I mean, if someone had five plants, no one's going to care. So is it the size of the farm?
I think that is a factor, the size of the farm, but there is also involved aspects about the values of the government want to communicate to society, like, we are not going to allow drugs, for example. This is the speech that when you put it in practice, it's the helicopters running out the farms. Doesn't matter. I also see that on little farms.
Because it is a drug.
Yes.
Yes. It's classified as a schedule class one drug here. Is it the same in Mexico?
Yes.
It is. Okay, go ahead.
I think also the most vulnerable people tend to be the smallest farms. Like, really, when I realize how this has been changing in the last 2 years and I presence these big farms, big time, like big grows, I don't see the helicopters going around, for example, as I saw them with the small farms.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you noticed that right away?
Yeah. Definitely.
So the big farms are okay. They're left alone.
They're left alone. And I'm thinking, I'm wondering why this legalization has been designed in such a bad way that is unprotective with little farmers.
And so say again why you believe there's more pressure on the little farmer?
Well, I think there is. The Legalization Act wasn't designed to protect the little farmers. Even if there is a period of proof of 5 years, it's not happening. I can see regions with largest growth going around. So I just think this is about business. And it's a very sad moment for a culture that was protective with the plant. And that's part of the research. That's part of the contrast over here and over Mexico, where people doesn't realize how developed is here about the seeds, the strains, the production, the distribution, the organization, almost perfect shape except for the legalization but designed. That's my opinion.
And so if you were to look into the future with all that you do know and all that you've seen, what do you predict will be happening here?
What is happening here, and I am afraid if the growers doesn't put a finger of influence, if they don't face what they have to do in a politic ground, they are going to lose the right to survive doing what they are doing. I think if the big grows, as they are doing, develop this big scale business, the farms are destined to disappear.
Are the big farms here, in your opinion, are those family farms too? Or who are these big farms? Any ideas?
Yes, I've been researching, for example, what connections with the families can these owners have. And apparently there is just one of the members, but not really connected. Like, the big investors are outside Humboldt County. So there is no, like, this perspective or this idea of a larger grow in the families and the traditional growers of Humboldt. For many ways, I've been asking why you want to compete in this size of growers. They said no, because they could lose control about the quality, and that's something they don't want to do. Second, they don't want to just see the plant as a product to commerce in big scale, because they cannot guarantee that the, as I said, the quality, but also the product is going to be commercialized at something else. And they really take care about, even about the tags, the names, you know, where they are being selling. That's wonderful to me. Like, okay, yeah, they really matter. But in the other hand, the challenge is to face these big businessmen. Uh-huh. That came
and then in Mexico?
In Mexico, that's interesting because it's illegal. It's highly illegal. So what is happening is just they growing and the criminal groups are taking all the production and they make the rest. That's why it's very mystery about the trimming or distribution. And it wasn't like this before the recent times when the war starts. The people was able to make the transportation of the weed. They have like a route of migration. It's a route also for transport the products, legal or illegals, as the weed is. They have been losing a lot of power or presence in that chain of commerce, the traditional growers.
Mm-hmm. And working conditions in Mexico, any ideas? Have there been any people who have gone sort of underground or undercover? And
yeah, the working conditions in all the products, the agricultural products, legal or illegals, including wheat, is terrible, I must say, especially in Michoacán, mm-hmm. there is people with any protection to certain products or mm-hmm. to use certain products, or the organic idea is just to forget about, it's not exist.
Mm-hmm. So chemicals, lots of chemicals.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. What is happening also is under criminal control is just people with guns. It's very usual to see big trucks with at least 10 people in the back with guns, big rifles. And they are just patrolling all the time, mm-hmm. all the time around these towns where you are growing weed. Wow. Or growing corn. Mm-hmm. That doesn't matter because most of the time the weed is grow inside the corn fields. Mm-hmm. But
and how about the comparison to here with the guns? What are you seeing?
You know, I didn't face this gun. I didn't see people with guns as in there. But what surprised me is the use of guns here. For example, like, oh, how many people is dying because of gun attacks? Mm-hmm. It's in a certain way, like it's very, I don't know if discreet, but it's different. It's happening there and it's happening here. There is very violent, it's terrible. And also there are attacks and there are shotguns. It's different, but it's both sides. The use of guns are killing people. That's undeniable.
Well, guns do what guns do.
Yes.
And when someone's pulling a trigger.
Exactly.
Guns are very effective. Uh-huh. But so you didn't see that kind of protection around the farms that you had seen around here, yeah?
Not mm-hmm. at all.
What about, has anyone talked to you about the increase in crime?
Over here,
due to the farming of marijuana?
That's an interesting question. Somebody approached me saying, like, hey, let's talk about the people that is disappearing, for example. And I was hesitating because in my personal experience and in my research, I didn't hear even about this. And I was inside the country, so I have to inform myself more about the crimes that are happening. Because unless in my experience, I really didn't face it that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so let's continue. So now you've been here a while, and are you almost done with your research? Where are you at with the research project?
I have this year for finishing my research. What am I doing right now is analyzing my journal diaries.
Okay.
In the fieldwork. Because I make one especially for the harvest, which is a very interesting moment of the plant and of the family growers. I was lucky to participate in one of the growers of one powerful woman that is close to my heart as well. And I said I was lucky because she had all the and like a ritual ambience I noticed and that I easily adopt around the plant. I just have this joy to go every day to the fieldwork and to participate in the harvest. She harvests in the ground. She harvests dry farm, which is a method, very ancient method and very friendly with environment. She harvests in a certain way that I know she takes care of everything. She knows every plant. She knows, even she named the plants. Mm-hmm. And she has a little journal for the plants mm-hmm. in the rows. And that kind
this
of
takes
detail.
You back to the cultural relationship. So that must have been so interesting for you, actually.
That was a dream. Being every day behind, observing her, but also observing the methods and observing the relationship with the rest of the workers. Mm-hmm. That was very, very powerful and mm-hmm. very it's beautiful work there.
Yeah, that connection with the land. And
yeah.
Okay, so you're analyzing the data in your journals about the harvest in particular, and...
And I'm in a process of writing the conclusions and these results of the journal. Probably I will present my exam on October this year.
Harvest?
Yes, the harvest. I am
you will
sure.
harvest your own harvest.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. I take it that way. I'm going to harvest this research.
Mm-hmm. And you'll do that in Mexico?
Yeah.
At the university?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, very people is very interested there. Every time my professors talk to me, it's like, really, you can see the plant, you can smell the plant, and what are you doing with your free time? And they are very concerned as well because all the stereotypes around.
Yeah, so what do you tell them?
Well, the plant is beautiful. You should be here. Come visit me because you have to see it with your own eyes.
Are you able to take pictures?
Yeah.
Yes, so that will be included in your paper?
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ask permission. I have like a... protocol of respect mm-hmm.
sure.
and everything. So I start to develop this relationship of respect. And then when it's possible and when I think it's a good moment, I ask for a picture. But sometimes I really took time for just observe.
Yeah.
Because the camera can be just a medium in the between. And you lose a lot of details of mm-hmm. your understanding.
Mm-hmm. And so are you publishing a book? Will this become a book for you?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I did such a... nice job with the coca leaf that become a book. And so I hope, I really
It did
hope.
Become a book.
Yes.
You're listening to KHSU. I'm Danielle Orr. I'm here with Brenda Perez. She's a PhD candidate and researcher, and she's studying the differences between the cannabis industry here in the United States and particularly Humboldt and Mexico. And so what book did you write about the coca leaf?
It's called, in Spanish, La Política sobre la Hoja de Coca en la Región Andina, which is the politics around the coca leaf in the region Andes.
Okay, so you have published a book, so this will be a book, I know, because if you publish once,
hopefully,
there's nothing stopping you. And is that book available in English as well? Or
it's just written in Spanish.
Yes, you know, and so you'll have to translate it perhaps?
Yes, so that, I would love to do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. What are you taking back, actually, from here and the comparisons in the final analysis?
I want to take back how the process in the governments or institutions are not reflecting what is happening with people, growers especially. So I said, what I'm watching in Humboldt and I was watching in Michoacán, it's very violent in both sides in different ways. What I'm watching with the actual crisis, the current crisis, economical crisis of the growers is really discouraging. It's sad. It's sad to hear them struggling to sell, struggling to start another grow, for example, at this time, and they are just thinking maybe not this year.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me is very easy.
And do you see that across the board in the United States, that economically things are starting, well, they've been in a downturn perhaps. Are you seeing anything like that, or is it specifically to the marijuana industry?
I've been seeing specifically in the marijuana
okay.
industry, yeah. What is also interesting to observe is how Mexico is importing marijuana from United States.
Mm-hmm.
California and Oregon, I think, is this big business industry.
Mm-hmm.
But again, business industry.
Into Mexico.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a turnover for
how
me.
How did you find that out?
That's in the journals, in the newspapers. Last year,
in Mexico?
It was The Guardian, I think, that published that article. And when I saw it, I was like, what? I mean, the seed there is ancient. We are talking about centuries. And now we are importing because there is no conditions to grow over
mm-hmm.
there. And that's just sad.
Mm-hmm.
And not only all the people that is working with the weed over there or the marijuana over there is coming here.
Mm-hmm.
So they are going to become the growers, the specialized growers over here as well,
mm-hmm.
or they are going to apply all the knowledge about marijuana in
mm-hmm.
California. And that's also like kind of sad in that point. It is totally sad in that point because we are losing these people that is connected with the plant because of the insecurity and the economic over there. And that's why I think that is going to be the kind of the results, how this flux of people, of migration, mm-hmm. for forced migration because of the war is turning here in Humboldt, Emerald Triangle, probably most Mendocino than Humboldt, but anyway, I'm going to study the impact here and how the people is prepared to receive this forced migration, because this is also a subject, like the migration in...
So forced migration out of here or into here?
Into here.
For the industry?
Yes.
Specifically?
For the violence
Because of the violence around marijuana in Mexico.
Yes.
The forced migration. So a lot of people are leaving because of the violence.
Yes.
Okay, so you're not really safe just as a person living.
Not at all.
Not
at all. And that concern is bigger when you think about deportations. So there's people stuck in there. People are trying to go out and people that is sending back. And so this is going to be a big crisis, big time, social crisis and humanitarian crisis if we think about. But regarding marijuana, also is the process about the plant. Mm-hmm. When I think people that is growing there is going to just abandon the field.
Mm-hmm.
It's about abandoning the plant and maybe people just going to produce more synthetic drugs than marijuana, for mm-hmm. example. Mm-hmm. And that is very dramatic and critical, because if we think what is growing a plant and what is producing a pill, mm-hmm. it's just two different ways to see the world, two mm-hmm. different mentalities. It's not more working with the land. It's mm-hmm. working in a laboratory with toxic products.
Yeah. So I know it's impossible to generalize, but let's do it anyway. What are the people in Mexico thinking? I mean, what is the hope there for the people in your country?
This year we have federal elections. We are choosing president and several other governors. And I think there is urgence for changing the way the regime, the security, politics, anyway. I think this could be the turnover. Mm-hmm. I really think so. We call the candidate the Bernie, the Mexican Bernie, one we support. And yes, we are behind him. A lot of people that I know, my community, mm-hmm. Latinx, it's behind
him. And say his name, please.
Andrés Manuel López Obrador. So López Obrador is really taking care about how this is going to change. He explains how. He has all this method. It's not just a speech. Mm-hmm. He explains how.
And what about the decriminalization of marijuana in Mexico? Is that on the table anywhere?
It was on the table last year because of this change. When the electoral times start, these topics that are very sensitive mm-hmm. start to be discussed.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the table and they start to think in legalize for medical use.
Mm-hmm.
They did.
That's how they started here too. So.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that's the way to go. They did, and that's why they finally proposed to import instead of producing locally, which is a mistake, my perspective. That's why we hear about these industries that are sending organic marijuana. Okay, we need organic marijuana, but we can produce it there without the harassment, you know? And so it's just about to connect the legalization with all the process as well as the production.
Here they say shop local.
Oh, there you
know,
go.
Right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah. And what about gun violence? What's on the table in Mexico about gun violence?
That's a very good question. This year, a report of a very scandalous operation called Fast and Furious that the U.S. government sent tons of guns to Mexico. It's been public. This is for the federal authorities to read about, because what happened when this war on drugs start is that administration allowed this sending guns with tax so they can localize the criminals. They thought that way. When criminals come and buy these guns in the black market, they are going to find them.
Mm.
What happened at the end is that Jewish people were killed by these guns when they started watching this, they retracted the Fast and Furious strategy, but the guns are still there. Uh-huh. And so what we know about the guns is they are coming from the United States.
Really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. This, mm-hmm. please, people, look, Fast and Furious. It's scandalous. Mm-hmm. It's terrible.
Once again, how does everything get into Mexico? I mean, you hear, or we saw, it's a few years back now, the underground tunnels. Are those?
Yeah, that's spectacular.
Unbelievable.
Man, it's unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
When I think, we the Mexicans, my God, all the humor around, if there is a wall, we're going to make tunnels or catapults or taller stairs or, you know, it's like, or swimming. I don't know. At submarines, there is all the technology for traffickers. There is a report that they have more technology even than, for example, the army in Mexico. And that was the concern for the U.S. government, and that's why they sent money to reinforce the Mexican army, the official Mexican army, because the traffickers were driving submarines, super, super advanced submarines. And there is waste traffic, but that's because of the amount of money that this black market represents. Mm-hmm. This is unacceptable. Yeah,
black markets are never really good.
No.
Yeah, it's underground. And
it's terrible. Well, traditionally make, for example, routes for drugs and let's say marijuana. Then in the 80s was cocaine, then people. So that's the crisis we are facing. People is getting as a product. That's terrible. Mm-hmm. When we see the immigrants, what they are being trafficked. Yeah. That's just to think about the migratory policies.
What does your family think about you being here?
My family is missing me. I know that.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah, they are happy because I am making what I want.
Yes.
And I'm happy. They are happy because I can bring this knowledge about the plan to Mexico. Yeah. I can bring these reflections about what is happening here locally to a local space in Mexico.
And so how will that impact the people in Mexico, do you think? You're bringing it for a reason.
Yeah.
What is that reason?
When we started the interview, I said, like, my passion could be to find ways to finish these drug wars. Like, this is not possible.
Finish the drug wars.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I really believe when I write my conclusions, I can make a list of things for the making public policy, for change this and change that. And these are clues that I just learned on the ground with the growers about the plant, starting by demystify the plant. Like the stereotypes that there is still in the government minds, it's just unbelievable. Like you are always stunned when you are around the plant, or that is killing you, or so many things around that are false. And that's just knowledge. Mm-hmm. I think that's my passion, really. Like, finish the drug wars, all the sufferings over there, and leave the plant being a plant, grow, like, develop, and being medicine, and being food, and being just gorgeous as it is. Mm-hmm.
You have my vote.
Thank you.
You're probably going to politics, I have a feeling.
Wow.
Yeah, wow.
I could jump because somebody has to start. That's why I say the growers here, you know, you have economic power and influence. Why you don't just jump to the politics? Because somebody has to change it.
What do they say?
They don't want to. They say, no, politics is very corrupt. It is corrupted, I know, but you are not, and you can make a change.
Yeah. It's like being an artist, you know, you can paint the painting, but it's hard to get it out there. It's a different world, right?
So, but you have to be brave.
Yes, you have to be brave.
Yeah.
You have to see what's wrong and then find a way to make it better.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You have to make sense what you are doing, writing, painting, saying. Mm-hmm.
So last question, the people in politics here, what are you seeing about them? What are your observations about the people that are doing that work?
Local government. I've been involved in a nonprofit organization since I arrived called Centro del Pueblo. They were proposing since last year to make the county a sanctuary county. So we ask for audiences with the Board of Supervisors. We bring testimonies about families that were ripped apart. And the board didn't receive the sanctuary initiative as good as we expect. They mm-hmm. didn't want to pass it. That's why we...
Did they give a reason for that?
They said it was the time of the SB 54, and they said that was enough as a state initiative. But we explained it wasn't enough, and because first, the SB 54 was mediatized on TV as a sanctuary law, and it's not. The ACLU explained to us through Emily Vélez, which is a representative here in Humboldt County, that it's not a sanctuary state. This is another law that certainly has protection for immigrants, but it, for example, it doesn't stop agents of the Immigration Custom Enforcement to appear in schools or in emergency rooms or to appear in your house from midnight to 8 a.m., they just are making it. What we are trying to do is to set up protocols, ways for acting in a very respectful way, because we deserve that respect. And that's my experience with local government. I know, because I'm in following the meetings with growers, that they are also like kind of protesting about the decisions of the local government. So it's possibly, I think there is going to be a big change of supervisors. And it's possibly the chance for people that can influence in those positions to vote mm-hmm. for whom they think they can make changes.
Well, it's fascinating because really you have exposed the connection really between the drug wars and politics and farming. And these are modern issues that go back a long time, apparently. And it's so interesting, the intersections that, you know, you can't talk about one without the other. And this is really enlightening.
That's what I think. Migration and mm-hmm. as we've been calling them drugs, it's very related, the plants. If we think about weed, marijuana, since China, India, Europe, America, it's been the migrant plant. And now that people are trying to stop in here, that's what I feel like, okay, this is nature. You cannot tag a plant or you cannot put it on jail. Mm-hmm. As well as people, this historic movement of people. You cannot just say, okay, the weed is green and you are brown, so you too, people, no, you need a tag. You're not going to move in with the freedom.
So fascinating sentence, the plant has migrated all around. So what does the plant have to say? Is there something you'd like to leave the listeners with that the plant has said to you?
I think the plant says, make me free. Take me with you and make me free.
Thank you so much for speaking with us here. All the best on your project.
Thank you very much, Danielle.
I'm Danielle Lori. Been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's wonderful engineer and editor, Jesse Eden, and to our entire Through the Eyes of Women team. You can listen to the show again anytime at Through the Eyes of Women's blog at khsuwomen.com. Join us again at 1:30 next Monday here on KHSU.